When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which reveals everything you ever needed to know about interiors and explains how to make it all really work for you in your home.
I'm Sophie Robinson.
And I'm Kate Watson-Smythe.
And I'd just like to say a big thank you to our sponsor, Topps Tiles. Now, whatever your interior taste or style of home, there's a Topps Tile for you. Follow them on Instagram at Topps Tiles for some everyday inspiration.
I love a bit of tile inspiration. I mean, I've said it before, I just don't have enough tiles in my house. I really need to deal with that. Is it too late for New Year's resolutions?
Oh, seriously, don't get me started. I've got that awful bathroom to do. So I'm definitely on the hunt for some inspiration. And I think I might want to do my kitchen as well this year.
Maybe I should start looking for inspiration for the shower room. It's been used by two teenage boys for the last few years, so it could do with a revamp.
So if, like us, you have a big project on for this year, hop on over to Topps Tiles for oodles of inspo. Now, with everything a bit grim and miserable and, well, February-ish.
That's my birthday month. All right, yeah.
Oh,
it's now we like February.
Drinks around yours then. You might be struggling to find much love for the great outdoors at the moment, but today's episode will inspire you because today we are on location with Oliver Heath, who is an expert in the field of sustainable architecture and biophilic design. In other words, the point where the great indoors and the great outdoors meet.
Oh, clever.
Do you like what I did
Who
there?
Who wrote that?
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? So as well as heading his own architecture and design practice, Oliver takes his knowledge across the globe to talk to architects about his research that really underpins health and well-being. And of course, we know him from his numerous TV appearances, and he has written, Kate Watson-Smythe, 3 whole books.
So have
his favourite subject. Oh, really? Okay, you're even Stevens. So, Oliver, hi. And
hi.
Thank you for having us in your home.
It's a pleasure. Should we be outside?
Oh, God, no, it's freezing out there. We've actually had storms down here on the South Coast, haven't we? So just to put it out there, Oliver lives in Brighton on the South Coast. And was it Storm Brenda?
Brendan. He was in London, you know.
Brendan.
Oh, Brendan.
Oh, he's in London
as well.
Oh,
yeah, bins blew over something chronic every 10 minutes.
So no, let's stay in your lovely warm home if we can.
We're inside then. Okay.
We're in the great indoors. So this house, it already looks different from the others on the street, but it's a 1960s house, I think you said?
Yeah, that's right. There were 2 houses built next to each other, both 1960s. You know, familiar, like wall-hung tiles, you know, terracotta stuff, lots of brick. Plastic windows.
Big windows, though.
Big windows. That's the nice thing about 1960s house. They don't have the floor-to-ceiling heights, but they do have nice big windows because of the sort of change in technology of the metal lintels going across. So lots of light going in, and you have a better footplate, but you don't necessarily have that kind of like more elegant floor-to-ceiling height. But that really suited me. because I wanted to do an eco-conversion and transform something to being, you know, fit for the future.
So I remember speaking to you, I think it might have been the week you moved in, I was interviewing you for The Independent, and you were talking about your plans to make this an eco house, I think was the phrase at the time. You know, I didn't really know what that meant at that stage. So you were very ahead of everyone, not only with buying a mid-century house, but also trying to convert it and make it sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, I made it my mission from the point that I was, you know, going on TV and doing the likes of Change Rooms to go that, you know, I've got this amazing platform to talk about stuff. I want to talk about things that I believe are really important to people, to houses, and sustainability, I believe, is just going to become so important. And of course, now we're seeing it, even, you know, over the last couple of years, it's just taking off. So finding this house that nobody would go like, oh, you've got to restore it to its former beauty. That, you know, a phrase that just absolutely kills my design intentions, you know, like nobody's going to worry, you know, if I transform the house. So yeah, we got this house, blank canvas. We took all the wall hung tiles off. We rendered it with insulating render, insulated the attic, put insulation under the floors, draft-proofed
it. So is that sort of like number one?
Yeah.
Start with the insulation.
Insulation.
When you're retrofitting an older property.
Yeah, yeah. Insulating it, making it draft-proof. And then we had to, you know, ventilate the property so we've got air coming in and out. And then, you know...
How do you do that then?
We see that little circular vent up there?
Oh.
That lies just in this very complicated system called a whole house heat recovery system. Ooh. So it looks really simple. Basically, it's like a series of tentacles of pipes going all the way through the house, going to a box in the attic about the size of a dishwasher. And that basically takes warm, moist air, extracts the warmth, and then pumps warmed, fresh air back into the other living rooms of the house. So the house is constantly drawing air out and then pumping fresh air back in.
So you've had to take the house apart to do that.
We took it right back to the complete bare bones. So literally floors up, walls out, windows out.
And is it easier to do that? You said you were looking for a 60s house. Is it just easier to do it in a 60s house than someone who's bought a Victorian house?
With a more modern house, you've already got cavity walls that you can put your cavity wall insulation in.
Right, yeah.
You don't have the heritage issue, so nobody's going to go... You can't do that to an old house. Also, we've got all these cupboards going through the house. Like, there are lots of big cupboards, so we could put all these big pipes going through to feed the pipes to here and there and up to the attic, which you don't tend to have all that storage necessarily built in to a Victorian house.
Yeah, so it sort of lent itself in the first place.
Yeah.
So having then taken it apart and reassembled it with rendering and insulation to make it function... Then do we get to the fun bit? The decorating?
No, no fun yet.
I want to talk about budget as well, because this is all sounding like this is swallowing up all your money.
You just
want to
talk about cushions. I can't even see a cushion. Sorry.
I know. I should say, I come from an architectural background, so I studied architecture for a long time. So, you know, the bare bones and the way a house works is really important. And this kind of underpins how you deliver health and well-being to a home, really. You know, it's got to be warm. You've got to sort out the damp and the moisture.
Are modern houses being built with all this in mind? Houses should have all this
Well, lots do. I mean, the reality is that 80% of the buildings that we'll be living in by 2050 are already here. So we're only going to build 20% more buildings. So the issue is, how do we deal with old buildings to make them healthy for us and serve us into the future?
And also, most people can't take their house apart and retrofit. No. So, I mean, the one thing I'm thinking we could all do is just open the window a bit more often.
Yeah. Be conscious of what you might have mould and the ventilation. What happens quite a lot is you take an old house that's naturally ventilated through sash windows or through air bricks. You seal all that up with UPVC windows, and suddenly there's no air getting in and out in the way that the houses sort of naturally worked. You know, even though the sash windows, as you lift the bottom up and drop the bottom, you've got a natural ventilation system of cold air coming in at the bottom and warm air escaping at the top.
So you should have sash windows open at the top and bottom at the same time?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I only have mine open at the bottom.
Yeah, yeah. That's so it's actually a very clever piece of technology.
Isn't it?
For the time.
Yeah. Who knew?
Yeah. So then you think about, well, you know, energy, electricity, so low energy technology like lighting and dishwashers and fridges and freezers that are on the whole time. And then other resources like water. You know, water was a real bugbear for me. I just hate the idea of wasting water.
Yeah.
But what we're heading towards is houses just being powered by electricity. And in 10 years' time, there'd be far fewer houses with boilers and electricity coming in. So we are moving towards this kind of
and renewable electricity. That's the key, isn't
yes.
it? Get your energy from a renewable.
But that's the easiest thing. You can just go to a renewable supplier. You just switch to somebody. So there are loads of companies like Good Energy, Ecotricity, Bulb. That's the easiest thing you can do, really.
So we'll put all that in the show notes with links so that people can switch over.
Switch over. Yeah, number one easiest thing to do. So everyone's going absolutely mad for well-being and biophilic design. And Ol, you're the person to tell us, where did it all come from?
So biophilia means love of nature. And it's a term that was popularised in the 1980s. And it's sort of been working its way through commercial design, particularly workplace design, where they can measure things like productivity and staff turnover and absenteeism. So it's got this really strong business case that demonstrates that when you improve the human connection to nature, it can help to reduce stress, which is obviously very damaging in the workplace, but also help people getting back to being at their best. So it's been investigated in commercial spaces like workplaces and hospitality and healthcare. And now we're seeing a real interest in people going, well, if it helps in the workplace, what could it do to my home? You know, homes are so important to our lives. There's so much opportunity.
So having then done the bones of the building, were there other sort of decorative things you do, or was that all about the sort of water and
heating?
Well,
we're standing in Oliver's sort of open plan kitchen, dining. There's a bit of a living space here. And I have to say, first up, there's been no compromise on the decor. This is a gorgeous space to be in and doesn't feel like a 1960s box. You've really added layers of texture and interest and decoration.
So there's a wood-burning stove, and then the wall is clad timber planks.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is actually larch. It's a type of tree. Came down in this big storm of 1987, if you remember that, from Kew Gardens. So this is actually kind of historic. It's got a little bit of a story.
Were you up
to
there
it.
The next day with your little van?
Right, I'm having that. Right?
How do you find 1987 vintage larch planking?
I was in a factory at the time, the factory where I got the timber for the front of the house.
A timber factory?
Yeah,
right.
Outside Lewis. And I was saying, yeah, I've got any old timber. I want something with a bit of character. And he just turned around and said, oh, see that whole wall? We're getting rid of that.
Oh, it was actually a structure in a building?
It was in a factory as a whole wall, which is why it's quite nicely aged. And it's got lots of knocks and dents and scratches. And I said, well, I'll have that then. So they literally took the whole wall down. And the nice thing about it is that it's so knocked and dented and scratched, it just lasts really well. So it's been here kind of 10 years. And through 10 years of hectic, scribbly family life, where the kids are just drawing and everything. But because it's got all this character already, you know, if we put a nail in the wall and then take it out, you can't see it. And if the kids scribble on it or scratch, it sort of just
And is that quite
away.
Important to you? Because obviously, you know, you're an architect, you're a designer. I'd say traditionally architects can be quite uptight about their
finishes.
But it doesn't sound like you are.
No. I much like nature, I mean, I think we take beauty from the imperfections, and that adds character and identity. As we get older, you have to take pride in those imperfections, the kind of the stories of one lost life, whether it's the sort of the scratches and the scars and the dents and the stuff that are
more
visible.
Yeah, we've got plenty of those, haven't we?
everyone has them. You know, that's the story of your life, and it creates that backdrop of who you are.
And you don't mind that the home does the same thing, ages elegantly with you.
I think it's much better. I mean, the floor, for instance, was brushed.
Is this an engineered wood floor?
It's an engineered wood floor.
Yeah.
But it was wire brushed so that over time it sort of, you know, inevitably just takes in a little bit of the dirt and then enhances the grain.
Into the grain of the wood. Right, okay.
Point being that it's very, very good at hiding marks from the dog, you know, muddy footprints, dust and everything. And it kind of takes the stress out of family living, not be like, if you've got a white surface, it's only going to be pristine white or messy.
Yeah, a really good girlfriend of mine's got, I know, but your house is like, you're quite precious about your house, aren't you? You must be out with that mop daily.
No, that's the mad husband.
that's it. She's got a mad husband.
Wow. Lucky.
But I had a girlfriend had this lovely white larch kitchen floor put in. I mean, it's stunning. It's beautiful. Mm. But she's hyperventilating daily. Mm. If anyone walks in with stilettos, the dogs aren't allowed in the house because of it, because it's quite soft.
Yes.
And I just think, gosh, that's so stressful.
Yeah. But I think, even though
it looks lovely.
Ours is the compromise because it's reclaimed floorboards painted white. So they already have got chips in and holes and knots. So they never looked perfect.
It's not perfect.
So it kind of works as a pale colour. But I'm interested, did you want a timber clad wall? I mean,
you're in a happy accident.
I mean, you're in a city, it's quite an urban environment. So was there a conscious decision to clad the wall in wood, or, you know, did you just do it because you liked the look of it?
It was a real conscious decision. There's actually evidence and research from a number of different countries, particularly forest countries such as those found in Scandinavia, but also Japan and Australia, that demonstrates that when you use timber on walls, it has the ability to reduce heart rates and blood pressure levels. So that's kind of amazing. So your choice of materials can physiologically affect how you feel in a space. But also the bed that you sleep in, if it's made of timber, can reduce your heart rate. So...
So if I've got...
Yeah.
If I've got a bed that's made of timber, but it's covered in a mattress and bedding and everything, and I can't see the timber, is it subliminally making me feel more relaxed? Or do you need to see the timber in order to feel
relaxed?
I think
relaxed? You need to see it.
Oh, okay. So, so it is a visual connection.
So you see the bed that I've designed upstairs has a lot of very heavily wire brushed, it's scorched and wire brushed timber. Following this research, going, well, look, this is amazing. And I think what's interesting is that as designers, we are taught about our design heroes.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's Mies van der Rohe or any of those others, you know, whether it's kind of gothic or postmodernism or minimalism, we follow our design heroes. And that's what we're taught at school.
Yeah.
But actually, these are just people with good publicity and an opinion. Very few of them.
Ooh, that's quite a punchy statement, isn't it?
Sorry, Lee. It's all just PR.
With a strong opinion, exactly. There's no research. There's no research that demonstrates that their work is better than anyone else. So what we do is we look at the work of environmental psychologists who've gone out there, done extensive studies over many years, very often, and we go, well, that's an interesting thing. How can we translate that into a piece of design? So one particular study that I think is pertinent to this room is a study called the Harvard Grant Study. It was carried out over 76 years. And what they did is they studied a group of men over this period of time to find out what was the key to human happiness.
Men they studied only.
It was, unfortunately.
It was 76
men.
Years ago.
So what they wanted to do was to find what was the key to human happiness. Was it job? Was it status? Was it money?
Yeah.
And what they found was that the key to human happiness is the formation of strong bonds with friends and family. So as a designer, I think, well, that's amazing. I mean, you could translate that in all sorts of ways in different areas of one's life. But as a designer, how do we bring people together? And how fundamental is that to you and your happiness? So within the whole house, the dining table then becomes the central key feature that brings everyone together. It's the place where you do the homework, you sit down, you get the sewing machine out, you do drawings on there. And at several points in the day, you sit and eat a meal.
Yeah.
And it's the therapeutic quality of sitting face to face, eating, not necessarily having to have a conversation, but it facilitates that conversation and the strengthening of the bonds between a family or with friends. So that's why the whole house is kind of centered around this table.
It is. This is very much the central part of your house, isn't it?
And everything goes off the garden to the kitchen to the
lounge. But it's all open plan. I mean, you've got a door to the hall.
Yeah.
But effectively, we're in an L shape with the kitchen at one point leading into the dining room and then round the corner into the sort of sitting room snug area.
That's why the fireplace is here as well, to create that sense of warmth and the flickering flames.
Yeah.
And to create that real sort of heart
fire,
of the home.
A real fire, you feel, is important, that flickering flame you just talked about.
For me... Yes, and there's a really interesting reason why real fires are good.
So of course there is, yes.
So there's lots of ideas. Yes, so there's this idea called non-rhythmic sensory stimuli, which is
brilliant.
Basically...
I'm loving all the geek speak, are you? I'm lapping it up.
I'm worried about how I'm going to spell rhythmic. But
yeah, look it up, it's fine. Yeah. So basically, it's a complicated name for something that is actually very simple. So non-rhythmic sensory stimuli is that wonderful, very calming sense of movement you see when the wind blows through the leaves in a tree, or creates ripples across a pool of water, or that very sort of calming effect that a fish tank has as you sit and gaze onto it. You know, it's constantly moving, yet remains the same. It's non-threatening. It's very relaxing and restorative. And the flickering flames of a fire do exactly the same thing. It's very engaging. It makes you feel warm and safe. You can maybe cook food over it. So there's lots of sort of evolutionary reasons why flickering flames make us feel good and safe.
It feels quite primal, doesn't it, a real fire?
It's exactly
it's interesting how
thing.
People are just drawn to it. Like in the summer, if you have a campfire, it's always the place everybody... Yeah. Draws
and that
around.
Crackle, isn't there? The crackle of wood and sometimes the smell. Yes.
And interestingly, what we believe is that it's that shared moment in nature that puts you in a more comfortable, relaxed, more positive and open and optimistic states that facilitates better discussions. And you know exactly that thing of sitting around a campfire, maybe you've got a glass of wine.
I was going to say that.
That does have a little bit. But you just gaze into the fire and you have quite different conversations with people because of that sense of warmth and safety and the multi-sensory inputs you get.
I've got a wood-burning stove too, and we love it, but they have had quite a lot of bad press, haven't they?
Yeah, lately? I mean, we're living in very rapidly changing times, and there's a lot of conversation about air quality at the moment.
There are the rules are changing all the time. The key thing with the wood burning stove is you absolutely must burn dry seasoned wood, because wet wood obviously gives off a lot more smoke, so it's a lot more polluting. So, and of course, we'll put all this information on our blogs and in the show notes. I'm madaboutthehouse.com and she's sophierobinson.co.uk.
And what about coal? Are you allowed to burn that still?
In certain areas, and smokeless coal, that's more complicated. But the wood burning stoves are meant for wood.
Oh, yeah, they are. Okay, so ignore I just said that.
Yeah, let's cut that bit out. right, so we've done.
Clue
so
in the name, Sophie. The clue is in the name. It's a wood burning stove.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Oh gosh, I am loving the look of this. Oliver, you've had a redecoration.
Yeah, so
I just put it out there. Me and Oliver have been friends for many, many years, and I actually knew you when you were building this place.
Yeah,
and I remember you giving me the original tour when it was a building site. Now, I haven't been round for a bit.
I think you were here at the New Year's Eve party where we were drawing on the walls.
Oh, God, you've still got photographs
of that
somewhere.
It was so messy, that party.
On the internet. But this has had a redecoration, this room. I remember it being white and light, but you've gone to the dark side.
It's behind the reclaimed sliding door. I can't see it. Out of my way.
It's
like a pocket. Very green.
Oh, can you hear the rustle of the palm trees?
It is very green. Yeah, yeah.
And then a black, so another wooden wall, but this is black.
This is actually stained with Osmo, wood stain. I think when we started in the house, we wanted to create a very light, reflective house. So we used a lot of white paint to bounce light around so that you didn't have to turn lights on. So there was a real environmental approach to the choice of white. And now we've moved on a little bit and we're talking much more about human-centred design and the way that design makes you feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it came to re-looking at our little lounge space...
Just roughly, what is the square footage here? Because it feels really snug, doesn't it?
10-foot square?
God, it's probably a bit bigger than that. So it's probably 3 metres by 4. It's probably 12 square metres.
I was born in the 60s. What can I tell you?
Yeah. Something like that. What's 12 square metres in? Yeah,
I have absolutely no idea.
I know 12 square metres is the size of a stable. Oh, it's a stable. I just know that. So there you go.
Country girl.
It's a stable
size. We have no idea how big this room is, all right?
But you
it's
get a
the
horse
size
in it.
Of a small double bedroom or a horse. There we go. That's this room, which is decorated in a lovely, this is a very Sophie colour, deep
colour,
emerald green,
yes.
Isn't it? On... Well, two walls. One wall is glass looking out to the garden, and then there's the black stained wooden clad wall.
Yes. We wanted to have quite a dark, reclusive room, somewhere we could just come and chill and we could hang out on the sort of big L-shaped sofa. It's got a sort of...
Velvet. Big. Actually, it's less of a sofa, more like a double bed.
It is. Yeah, yeah. So this is a little movable...
Ottoman.
So the idea is the footstool pushes into the L shape so you can essentially cuddle up like you're in bed to watch a movie.
So it means all four of us can get on here, watch TV, watch a movie, or just hang out and spend time in here. Because it's a 1960s house and not a Victorian house, we don't have any fireplaces in the house that naturally
none of those alcoves
to put books in. So for ages, we're like, where are we going to put the books? So we created, in a sense, a sort of a focal point with this multi-shaped...
It's like a modular cubey bookshelf,
it is very, very simple, but it creates a kind of focal point for the room. It's lifted off the floor to make the room feel a little bit bigger.
Oh, clever.
And there are some just kind of very warm lights in there so that, you know, the room just feels very snug.
When you say warm lights, what, just sort of little... Oh. You've popped a few table lights in there.
Well, yeah, they're just sort of...
Down on the floor.
Oh, look, he's got a pink crystal.
He's got a crystal.
I love these.
So tell us about... Is that a salt light?
It's a Himalayan rock salt lamp.
Of course it is.
And you only find them in those hippie shops.
There's one or two of those in Brighton, I believe.
Kate's always in the hippie shops with their dream catchers.
Exactly. So we recently designed a meditation and yoga space in central London, and we designed this sort of beautiful central feature with about 7 or 8 of them clustered together. And there is something so warming and wonderful about the light they give off.
Because the light bulb is inside the rock crystal, so you get this sort of pinky
orange.
Well, it's a bit like a lava lamp, isn't it? Without the movement. Yeah, that's the colour.
A lot of texture, but it's this wonderful warm light. It's quite a dusk light. Yeah. So it makes you feel very calm.
Oh, it's super nice. And there's lots of plants. I mean, you know, obviously you've got the enormous windows.
Yeah.
Like you had in the dining room looking out to the garden, but we've got plants hanging from the ceiling, they're on the floor. It gives it quite a jungly vibe, doesn't it? And in the bookcases as well, those pops of green.
And the green looks amazing, doesn't it?
Against the back. Is that why you had green walls? Was that...
No, I just love that was colour. In Budapest recently and I went to an art gallery and saw this painting, a Goya painting.
Right.
And it had this beautiful green. I came back home and said, Kate, I've taken a picture of this. Look at
and
this.
Kate is your wife, just to flag it up.
And is she on board with all of this? Or has she ever said, you know, really, I don't want another wooden wall. I'd like some nice smooth plaster, please, love.
Kate's very creative. Katie is a jewellery and award designer. So she designs awards for competitions and things. So she's very creative and trusting.
Okay.
and supportive of these ideas.
Yeah.
But the ideas aren't necessarily born out of, you know, whim or fancy. It's like, look at this, and let's do this. And I've got to say, initially I got the colour wrong, and it was too bright. It was a bit green screen.
Yes.
So I painted the room, and I was like, nope, it's wrong. Two shades darker, and it just felt that
it's
much more relaxing.
I think that's so great to flag up that, you know, here you are, award-winning interior designer, and you know that you can put paint on the wall and go, no, it's not right, and redo it. Because so many people have angst about getting paint colours wrong.
Well,
and
I think
it's just really nice to put it out there and saying sometimes until you get it on the walls, you don't actually know,
so
and
different.
It's fine to change it.
It's worth it, because otherwise this stuff just bugs me so badly.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So I want to go upstairs and see the bed that's going to make me sleep better.
Oh, yeah, let's see that. Go on.
You'll notice it's much more lifting up here. this is nice. This is a really nice hanging plant holder called the Morva by Tom Raffield. Do you know him?
Based down
in Cornwall. He does really, really beautiful stuff. And I really love hanging plants. It's lovely to have plants hanging down. Always makes houses and buildings feel much more lush and tropical.
Yeah.
Having stuff hanging down and seeing plants in one's periphery and not just coming up from the floor. So having stuff like this and
cascading, having the plants coming in different directions.
The other thing is, if you live in a small house and you don't have the floor space, hanging plants from the ceiling is just a really great way of getting them in, having a lot of visual impact from them.
Yes. So this one hangs all the way down the stairwell.
Yeah, that's clever.
Is that a grapevine?
No, it's an ivy. English ivy.
Grapevine. God, you're such a Londoner.
That's what we call them in London. You call it ivy down here. We call it grapevine, darling. So, look.
Oh, is this your design, this bed?
Yes.
So it's a bed that looks like a house, essentially.
Like a Wendy house.
It's got like a black sort of timber frame.
Yeah.
And then importantly, the headboard...
Is wood again.
And this is a particular type of wood. It's called Shosugiban timber. And it's a Japanese technique for scorching and then wire brushing the timber down. So
Because it's not black, it doesn't look burnt.
No.
You've brushed all the burnt wood off.
And the burning burns off the softer bits of timber between the harder grain.
Right.
And it creates this very lovely textural surface. So listen to this.
Oh, yes, that's nice.
I'm not sure it is.
That was more just to show you that how raised it is. So it's kind of like very textural.
Yeah.
So it feels very woody. Now, the nice thing about that is you know immediately it's not a plastic laminate surface.
Oh.
So it has a real sense of authenticity
texture. What are your thoughts on faux timbers, be that a laminate or a printed tile or a wallpaper? Oh, look at the face.
I've got two thoughts. I think it's much better to have real forms of nature in and around one's life. But if you can't, then maybe it's better to have some visual texture.
Right. Better than nothing?
I think it's better than nothing to have some timber surface. But I'd always strive to have real timber.
Because ideally. You're not just getting the look, you're getting the feel.
The sensory quality.
Exactly.
I mean, we have all these senses and we tend to just design for the visual.
Yes.
And we understand, you know, 80% of our built environment through our eyes. But the thing I wanted to tell you about here is actually bedrooms are really, really important. I mean, they're not just a sort of sanctuary to sort of hide away from the kids.
They are
partly that. And then, of course, spend time with one's loved ones. But sleep is so important to us. And it's so fundamental to our health and well-being. But we've really taken it for granted.
Yeah.
You know, have people boasting how little sleep they need. But the impact of poor sleep, of course, as we all know, as parents or designers or, you know, people have busy lives, the impact of poor sleep is catastrophic on one's life and one's daily life and one's relationship with people. You know, when you don't sleep well, it affects your...
everything.
Interpersonal relationships. Well, Katie says one gets grumpy. My wife.
I don't know.
I've never seen it myself.
No.
When you don't see it, you know, it affects your relationships, your ability to focus, to concentrate, you get distracted easily. And also, if you don't sleep well, it can actually make you more attracted to fatty foods. So there's a risk of diabetes, obesity, depression, and even cancer. So we really need to think about how we design our bedrooms to support good sleep.
Oh, come on. What are your top tips?
And so that is really important to me. So the first thing is natural light is fundamental to getting good night's sleep. Natural light affects our circadian rhythms. And our circadian rhythms are our body's reactions to periods of light and dark across a 24-hour period. It affects our mood, our behaviour, and importantly, our body's release of melatonin and serotonin, which are the body's sleep-wake hormones.
So serotonin's the happy one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So getting enough natural light balances up your circadian rhythm, which helps you to be both alert and awake in the daytime, and also to sleep better at night. So being outside, getting what we call a photon shower, which is an intense burst of natural light, is really, really important every day. And, you know, we spend 90% of our lives indoors. So
I know, it's astonishing.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, so, incredible.
So getting out and being in natural light is really important to reset your circadian rhythms. But of course, in the middle of winter, there's not so much natural light, and we have to think about technology. You know, in our lives, of course, we've welcomed in televisions, laptops, tablets, and it's the blue light that comes from this technology that late at night stimulates the brain. It tells your brain it's the middle of the day, and we all know that thing of looking at our smartphones, you know, social media, the news, the weather, putting your phone down, thinking that you're tired, and then still, you know, your brain is whirring and buzzing. In my bedroom, here.
Well, you've got two chandeliers hanging down either side. Yes.
Oh, I love those. Vintage glass beaded chandeliers.
So these are kind of vintage chandeliers. Importantly, they are being used to hide these light bulbs. Now, these are Philips Hue light bulbs. Now, the nice thing about this is that they're colour changing. So at night, what we do is
So you've got an app on your smartphone.
Yeah.
And the ordinary sort of yellowy light that we normally get has just gone sort of reddy pinky colour.
Deep orange, like a dusk colour.
It's a dusk colour.
So it reminds the brain.
Oh, I really want some of these.
I'd never understood what the point was, because I've spoken to them before and I just thought, well, I don't want to live in a disco. Why do I want to change the colours of the lights?
No.
And they didn't explain to me what the actual point
was.
That's a very harsh daylight.
This is daylight. This is the light that comes from a computer, laptop or TV.
Oh, that's horrible.
So see the difference.
It's a very bright white light.
Very energising. And it's great in the middle of the day to kind of energise you. If you're sitting at your desk and want to be energised, burst of natural light. But at night, turn it down to deep orange.
Oh my God, you're making it lighter. So it's got a dimmer on it as well, this phone app.
So, yes.
Oh, you've got to have your phone in the room though, you see.
Yeah, now you see what happens. Talk yourself out of that one, Oliver.
No. In reality, once you've set the colour, you can take your phone out the room, charge it up somewhere else, and then turn the light off by the switch.
By a traditional switch.
Yes. Okay.
And you would tend to, that's your evening colour is the orange, so you don't need it to be green or pink or different colours.
Exactly, so it's orange, and you're trying to have that just for at least an hour before you go to sleep.
Yeah.
So you just remove that kind of stimulating light.
Got it.
Forget that. This is a Lumi light clock.
A Lumi
So this is a new edition. I'm going to
It's L-U-M-I-E. I've heard about those.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to turn this off and you'll see the impact of that. So basically, a Lumi light clock uses colour-changing light to wake you up in the morning. So it's much more gentle than a blaring alarm
clock.
Is it
one of those ones that come on, the light comes on gradually before you awake?
Yeah. So I set my alarm for like 6:45 in the morning. Half an hour before that, the light starts very, very gently as a deep orange. You can't quite see it in this light. You can just about see it there.
Yeah.
And then over the course of half an hour, it gently turns on from orange to yellow. And eventually, at the point that I'm supposed to wake up, it's bright like that.
Oh, bright white. Blue. Bright bluey white.
So it very gently wakes you up using light. And at that point, then an acoustic alarm comes in that's basically birdsong.
Oh,
so it's a very,
get out of here.
It's a very gentle way of waking up.
I've got Radio 4 and some horrible politician shouting in my ear at 6:30 in the morning.
Exactly.
It's gone really badly wrong, haven't I?
It's a much more gentle way. It's mimicking nature again, isn't it? It's mimicking the sunrise
and the birdsong.
So trying to sort of key into some of those much more evolutionary ways of waking up with natural light. And I've got to say, when I wake up in the morning, because I wake up much more generally at the point that my alarm is supposed to wake me up. I'm feeling awake
You're
already.
Not getting
and I tend
shudder.
To get out. I'm not like going for the snooze button. It's much better to get up feeling
awake. So it makes you feel a bit more perky, does it, in the morning? You sort of.
Well, I get up and go and do some exercise, and it means that at the point that I wake up, I'm not going like, I can't be bothered
today.
I can't face it. I'm too
you
tired.
You wake up feeling ready for exercise. That is groundbreaking. Who feels that? Who feels like getting up and doing, I think he's a weirdo.
Oh, that made me. I'm a healthy weirdo then.
Healthy weirdo.
Yeah. Okay. So there are benefits.
I think it's brilliant. I'm very taken with that. I really like the idea of doing it in reverse at bedtime because I always get into bed and read and sort of read till my eyes are heavy. But actually the idea of the light sort of gradually fading till I couldn't see and then making me tired.
I think my eyes are now, as I'm getting older, is doing that for me anyway.
Yeah, so. The light's just going out.
I'm just getting older now or the light's going down. Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't need to be reminded of that
so
much.
Yeah, that's really, really good tip. So the other thing is, obviously, you've got the lighting that works really well and the wooden bed. And there's an enormous cheese plant, a monster monstera in the corner. So plants is good as well.
Yes. I mean, our approach is what we call biophilic design. So biophilia means a love of nature.
Yeah.
And it's all about how you improve the human connection to nature and the buildings that are so important to our lives, like our homes. So part of that is about bringing real forms of nature in or being able to see elements of nature. So in the bedroom here, we've got a large monstera plant that has sort of rather got out of control. It seems really like
Whose side of the bed is that?
That's Katie's side.
I was going to say, poor Katie. Yeah. It's like, feed Miss Seymour.
And that's Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors, it's that poor Katie.
She
might actually be having nightmares. I think this biophilic design might not be working for her. We'll have to ask her.
She's never worked out entangled by it. So. No, lots of plants are actually very good for us. So as well as being, you know, good for adding visual texture and colour into the home, lots of plants can actually remove toxins. So they can remove things like volatile organic compounds that we find in paints and in varnishes. Formaldehydes that we find, that's like the glue that pulls our chipboard together.
Right.
And find anywhere where you've got glue gluing things together, you can find formaldehyde. Maybe brominated fire retardants, which is what they put onto sofas and fabrics. So plants are very good at removing those, and they sort of ingest it through the roots and remove that from interior spaces. So as well as removing toxins, they help to modify temperature and humidity as well. So of course, you know, the earth kind of draws in the humidity that's formed when you breathe at night.
Is there a certain plants for certain rooms? Or does it not go into that much detail? It's just having some kind of plant.
There are certain plants that are better for different rooms. So some plants give off oxygen in the day and take out CO2 at night.
I thought they all did that.
Some do the other way around. What you want to do is produce oxygen at night and remove CO2. So certain plants like mother-in-law's tongue, snake plants, I think ivies and ferns are very good for that. And of course, lavender is a very good plant because of the scent that it gives off. You know,
relaxing.
It's long associated with it being more relaxing and aiding sleep. So certain plants are very good for bedrooms and other plants good for other spaces.
That's fascinating.
Well, how do you keep them alive? That's my problem.
You don't. You don't necessarily all the time. But it is actually, the nice thing about it is you've got to get into understanding a plant. You know, a pet will come up to you if it's hungry, and a plant will tell you if it needs being looked after. It's saying either, I need moisture, or I need a little bit of vapour spray, or you've overwatered me.
It's quite sophisticated, there's plants in this house.
Yeah.
But I never know, because I've got plants where they go brown leaves around the edges, and you think, well, is that overwatering or underwatering? Talk to me, I don't know what you want, plants.
So we have a sensor, so you have a little probe with a dial, and you stick it into the soil, and it tells you how much moisture is in there, and if it needs watering.
Yeah, I need that probe, that's all I need.
They're really good, they're like £5.
Well, and it's
plant moisture meter.
Moisture detector, moisture meter. I need that.
Yes.
And it basically tells you if you've overwatered it or underwatered it, or if it needs. So teenage bedrooms, but the house is going through a transformation. The girls are, you know, 11 and 13.
You're looking cagey, Oliver.
I am. We've got a couple of teenage
bedrooms. Is that
like
beads of sweat on your
I've got two teenage boys. There is nothing in there that can shock me in any way, shape or form. The entire contents of my kitchen are in one of my boys' bedrooms.
It's dark. The bed's not made. It's not. Oh, wait.
Oh, brilliant. So, oh, my
this
God.
This is fine. It doesn't even smell.
No, it's because we ventilate the rooms. So yes. That's not even there. So we got silks here that hang from the ceiling. So
oh, is that for like aerobic-y, yoga-y?
Yeah, so they can swing
anti-gravity.
Them, actually. So they've got like swings in the room, which they like. Yeah, so we spent most of Christmas just trying to like sort out the rooms and then putting new beds.
Oh,
and,
so
and
bigger beds.
I think they need to have a sense of identity, a sense of privacy, somewhere they can bring their friends and just hang out. So double bed means they can lounge around a bit more.
Obviously, desk space, I'm seeing.
Desk space, storage. You know, they still want their teddies and their stuff. You know, at some point we're going to tackle this, like, do you need all these? And
right.
Which of these are actually important?
But letting go is quite hard, isn't it?
That's really
sentimental
hard. Yeah, they're really,
attachment.
I think some adolescents want to get older and want to be 18, 19. And some are still looking
yes,
back.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right with
going,
that. Yeah.
What's happened to my childhood and what is the future going to be like? And my kids are like really still
stuck
enjoying
that.
being kids and playing and mucking around together and being that. And I don't necessarily want to be the older teenager, which I'm actually quite pleased with.
ours, I think, when they went to secondary...
So your boys are...
They're 16 and 18. But when
so
they
the
went to secondary
on.
School, I remember one of mine... playing with his Lego slightly secretly because he's always quite enjoyed it, but feeling that he shouldn't do that or shouldn't admit to it. And then gradually things get moved, but there's sort of one teddy on each shelf, which is the main one, and the others have surreptitiously
gone.
They still
got their teddies.
I probably shouldn't say, should I? they have them in the room. Yeah they have one.
Brilliant.
There's always been one main one. But no, they're on a very high shelf and they're very dusty.
My brother's 43, and when my mum was clearing out the family home when they moved, she held on to a lot of his teddies. And then finally we were doing another chuck out and I said to Mum, look, seriously, he left home like, what, over 20 years ago, you can get rid of them. I took a photo of them and then they went, they actually couldn't even go to the charity shop, they were so moth-eaten. Yeah. And then I told him.
No, but he was
devastated. So there you go.
My husband's still really upset that his mother cleared out his Pink Panther annuals from 1973. Oh, furious, no. He's furious.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're in the bathroom. Anything bio... Oh, it's echoey, isn't it? Anything biophilic or making yourself happy about the bathroom? Or is that just come in, shut the door?
As a designer, I tend to think about the sort of sensory journey. So if you imagine in the morning, you're woken up very gently with a kind of changing light from bedside clock, step out of the warm bed, onto the sheepskin rug, onto the wooden floor, and then onto the sort of stone floor in here.
Green slate?
It's called Kirkstone slate from the UK.
This is the natural green slate?
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes, it's really beautiful. So it's got a lot of texture and grain and lines on it. So it needed quite a lot of sorting between the bits that had lines in and the bits that didn't. And the little bits, you can just about see, have got sort of a little bit of sort of gold fleck in it.
So it's, you've wrapped the floor, the side of the bath, and the shower wall in it. So the whole bathroom is sort of wrapped in it.
I think it's one of those things that I was conscious that if we're going to do the bathroom, I don't want it to kind of like feel like it's gone out of style, out of fashion.
So it's not trend-led.
It was much more about just looking at the beauty of natural textures and patterns and going, well, you know, that sort of stuff doesn't go out.
Yeah.
If we can rely on that, then the house will always feel like it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. Yeah.
That's interesting, because doing a bathroom, I would argue, is one of the hardest rooms because it's quite a commitment. It's not something we switch and change readily because tilers and plumbers and the materials, it all adds up, doesn't
really
it? So this bathroom you obviously did 12 years ago when you did the renovation.
Yeah. But
and it has totally stood the test of time. And I think maybe because you've gone for quite a classic natural stone rather than anything that was maybe patterned or colourful or...
And tile trends do change, and we think they don't, but you know, you look back 5-10 years ago and it's really transformed.
Yeah, that limestone bathroom thing was such a huge thing.
This sort of looks very now again.
My point is that if you go for natural patterns and textures, they tend not to date quite so much.
Awesome. I think that's it, isn't it? That's a brilliant piece of advice.
These are also reclaimed shutters from a French chateau.
Which you've used as doors on your bathroom storage.
Yeah.
Bathroom storage? You've got quite a lot of bathroom storage. I mean, there are three women in this house.
Then there's a light that kind of beams through it so that they glow.
Oh, nice!
Fancy!
And then the side light is important Psychologically, it's really important to put lights either side of the mirror, because quite often that's the last thing you'll see of yourself before you step out for the day.
Well, it's the most flattering way to light your face, it I've is. Understood.
What, in sideways?
Yeah, absolutely. On a dressing table mirror or a bathroom mirror, having a pair of wall lights either side, so the light's hitting you either side, and definitely not above, you know, that downlight shadow
that's
you get.
That's very aging.
That's
very
my downstairs
aging.
Room. It's horrible. So you're saying because it's flattering psychologically, that gives you a positive boost?
I think so, yeah, absolutely. You know, you see yourself in the best light before you step out and face the world every day.
I had a mirror. For years, I had a mirror I didn't know inadvertently was a slimming mirror. So I've always gone out of the house going, whoa, I look amazing. I look like Victoria Beckham. And then I saw myself in a proper mirror. It was like, dear God, I've got a diet.
No, just keep looking
so
in that slimming mirror.
So the psychological boost is, works really well.
So in summary, what I'm taking away from Oliver's home tour is red light at night, folks. Get away from those screens, ditch that blue light and get yourself a lovely dusky glow to fall asleep to. Keep it real is the other thing, with real natural timbers and materials, because it's not just all about the look, it's how it makes you feel in your home, and it will even lower your heart rate, no less. And then embrace this whole theory of biophilic design. Get loads of plants in your home. They reduce stress, they aid recuperation, and they also clean your air.
Works. Now, before we go, Oliver, everybody has to do this. Tell us your design crime.
Okay, so my design crime is basically kind of flashy, over-extravagant interiors that make you feel uncomfortable.
Oh, I'm there. Like it.
You know, it's like gold taps that just show your finger marks. It's like covers over sofas, you know, plastic covers that I used to have. Or you know, just extravagant things that make you feel uncomfortable. I think you've got to keep it real and create spaces that just make you feel great. And if you feel great, then you'll have great interactions with people and people will enjoy being in those spaces.
Perfect.
I'll sign up for that.
Yes. So before we go, a quick reminder that if you want more pearls of wisdom from Sophie and me, come and find us on Instagram, where I'm mad about the house and she's Sophie Robinson Interiors. Have I got it right?
You
this
have
time?
This time,
I've got
finally.
It right. And Oliver is at Oliver Heath Design. And don't forget to check out the Facebook group, The Great Indoors Podcast, where they're all busy chatting away and ignoring every word we say on here and breaking all our rules as if they have personalities and tastes of their own. The idea.
Do spread the great indoors love however you can by telling a friend or writing us a little review. We've had some really nice ones, by the way, lately. And finally, just the biggest thank you, Oliver, for having us in your beautiful home. And what are you up to next?
I'm taking part in a new exhibition called Planted, and it's on in May in London, and it's all about urban greening and health and well-being. So it's going to be like a fascinating collection of people selling amazing stuff and getting involved with how our spaces make us feel.
So I guess people can find out more on that on your website, which is
oliverheath.com.
Simples.
Thanks also to our sponsor Topps Tiles, to our producer Kate Taylor, and of course to you for listening so avidly.
And we'll see you in the great indoors.
Steady.
That's lovely, isn't it?
Was till you broke it.